This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 496, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
I am every person that you've ever ignored. I am the flaming bag of dog shit on your porch. Used to think I was a savior, a part of a cause. Now see, I am nothing, no nothing at all. I am every reason that you scream all these words. I am every chorus, I am every verse. I'll never let you feel done. You'll always be haunted. I will keep you fighting. It's not what I wanted. It's not what I wanted. It's not what I...
Well, hello there. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick the Week podcast, episode 496. My name is Ron Richards, and as always, I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Can't shake me, Ron.
I wouldn't want to. And Josh Flanagan.
I feel like we're neighbors who just stumbled upon you weeding.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Hi. Oh, you want to talk about comics? Sure.
Can I invite you into my yard and we will discuss topics?
Got some fresh apples in the basket.
It's so idyllic. It's an idyllic little picture. I'm mowing the lawn.
City boy came up with that. I'm impressed.
City boy. Anyway,
he just thinks that everybody in the suburbs has a giant basket of apples.
You don't?
An orchard.
At all times.
Yeah.
Only certain parts of the year.
I assume everyone's always got a pie cooling on their kitchen windowsill.
Oh, I just have a lasagna in the oven.
It's hard because it doesn't sit there well with the bars. Which is what the outer city areas are like now. Just bar infested hellscapes.
All right. Well, the name of this yard is iFanboy, and we love comics and pie and lasagna. And every week we read our stack of comics, and one of us picks our favorite book and call it the pick of the week. Then we come here and talk about that book, other books, and other stuff. Maybe we'll read your email, talk about fun things like that. Who knows?
If you're lucky.
We are going to warn you, though, that we're going to spoil the comic books, like spoil them rotten. We're
like
gonna
talk
reckless abandon.
Yeah, like an apple. Just
like an apple that's fallen out of the basket and left in the yard.
It's the ones that you give to those neighbors you don't like. You want an apple? Hold on, let me get you something from my special batch.
So be warned, if you don't want your comic spoiled, pause, come back, listen after you've read them. This week, Connor had the pick, and Connor, take it away, sir.
This was a good week of comics, I thought. I had not a huge number of to read, because it was another fifth week. I had a really high quality week of comics, and the best one I read was Batgirl Annual number 3, which was funny because I wasn't even going to read it in the first place. I just at this point gloss over annuals, but then I saw a preview of it and saw what the premise was, and then I remembered the last time Batgirl did a special issue, it was really good, so I picked it up. And it's written by the regular creative team of Cameron Stewart and Brendan Fletcher. And features art by Bengal, who did the last special issue, and David LaFuente, and Ming Doyle, and Ming Ju Helen Chen. And it is this really tour de force art issue.
How great is Bengal?
Fantastic.
Bengal is amazing.
Yeah. I don't know why Bengal isn't on a regular book.
Tiger of some kind?
I first came across Bengal back when I was working at Image, maybe about 8 months ago or so. And I'm just like, wow, this guy's amazing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's really good, and he does the main story, and this is basically a team-up issue. And it's a one-shot sort of self-contained story in which Batgirl's trying to stop this terroristic group from doing something bad, but that's really a MacGuffin to get her just to team up with a bunch of characters from the DCU. On the cover, you see Grayson, and so she in the first story, she runs afoul of Spiral, which is led by Huntress, and Dick Grayson obviously is a member of that group. We'll get to that in a second. The second story, she runs into who did she run into the second story? I'm scrolling super fast. There's a story with the Gotham Academy girls at the end that may, and then there's a Batwoman story that Ming Doyle draws, and then David LaFuente's with Spoiler. That's the second story, and it's just a super fun issue. I would totally take any of these artists on Batgirl should the regular artist there want to leave. David LaFuente in particular does a fantastic Batgirl. I don't know why he's not on a regular book. What's happened to all these guys that we used to love 5 years ago that are not on books anymore?
Well, LaFuente, I mean, he was an example of people who sign an exclusive deal and then go away to nowhere and do nothing that you're interested in. And so his Marvel deal ended a few months ago or earlier this year, I think. And so now you're starting to see him. We're going to start to see more work by him emerge as he can work for other people.
They shelved him?
Yeah, pretty much. It's pretty tragic, actually.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
We know that's happened to a few guys. Happened to Jamal. Well,
totally do. But he's a guy who. That's just sad because he was so good. And
yeah, no, I know. Yeah, no, and it's not like he wasn't doing anything. He was doing some stuff, but he wasn't doing anything. Like he was bouncing around title to title. And it was just like, oh man, he's so great. Like put him on an ongoing, and he'll just destroy. So good. So, you know, Marvel squandered, and we get the benefit with stories like this and probably other stuff down the road. I know him and Kieran announced the book Ludocrats at Image Expo in January, but because of Kieran's schedule, that got pushed to next year. So that will be forthcoming. So
he's probably just do fill-ins until then. The main story, though, my favorite part was the Dick Grayson team-up because that, you know, for me, they're the first couple of comics. Barbara Gordon and Dick Grayson. So, you have to say it that way.
No, I understand.
And the story is a sort of a raid or Judge Dredd style where there's a building and it's full of soldiers and they've got to start at the bottom and get to the top and clear it out. And Dick is staying one step ahead of Huntress and Batgirl because, as I'm sure you all remember, Dick Grayson is dead to the world. Everyone thinks he died in Forever Evil. So he can't let her see him because, A, they have this complicated relationship, and B, it'll break her heart if she sees he's still alive and she hasn't known about it. But he's also worried because while Spiral has technology that allows them to mask their face with any face they choose, she will recognize his body language and fighting style.
Or butt.
Well, that's the joke at the end of the story. So when they finally come together, he puts on the face of a middle-aged German soldier, looks kind of like Slade Wilson, and she buys that for a little while. But then at the very end, when they're putting their prisoners into the Spiral helicopter, she checks out his butt for a second, and there's a little word balloon thought bubble of his face in her head, and she has a confused look in her face, but she brushes it off. There's no way this old German guy with a goatee could have the same butt as Dick Grayson.
Dick butt?
Dick butt.
I also like the use of Schnell to get across that he was doing a German accent.
Oh, did you read this?
yeah. Once you made it the pick, I went and read it. I'm gonna check it out. Yeah, I'm in a sampling mode. You know,
like. Well, I think from your perspective, I think you probably really like the art.
Yeah, no, I love the art. Yeah, I mean, like, well, yeah, the thing was, once you picked it, I was like, oh, why did he pick an annual? And then, and you know, because annuals are throwaways.
It shows you how much disdain we have for each other.
but once you picked it, I went and looked to see why you picked it. And of course, I know all the stuff that's going on with Batgirl and what everybody likes it and all that fun stuff. And I'm actually Brendan Fletcher is a really good guy, and I think he's a good writer, and he's somebody like who is going to do really good things in comics. Is doing good things in comics, but will do more.
Prez, right? He does Prez, right?
No, he does Black Canary, and he's co-writing.
Batgirl, that's Cam.
Yeah, but. But once I saw it was Bengal and David LaFuente, I was like, oh, sign me up.
Yeah.
So.
And Ming Doyle. I really like the look of the Batwoman story. While it stylistically didn't really fit with the other, it still looked really great.
Yeah. For me, like, I could give two craps about Dick or Spiral or any of this stuff that's going on. Although I hear that's very good, and I'm a big Tim Seeley fan, and I know he worked on that. But Like, so story wise, I don't care, but like art wise, it was a blast to read. It was just, yeah. So
and I haven't really, I dropped off of Gotham Academy because they added Damian Wayne, and I've got a very hard and fast rule about that now. But
you're just, you're holding a grudge.
I'm holding a super grudge.
Yeah.
And but it was nice to see those characters again, and I think this version of Barbara Gordon's a really fun character to be around, and I'd like to see her interact. She doesn't really get to interact all that much in her regular book with other characters, and it's just starting to happen a little bit. And here she gets to sort of run the whole gamut of Gotham. So that was fun for me. And as a Batman fan who doesn't really find a lot of joy in Gotham City these days, it was nice to...
I like that as a Batman fan who doesn't find a lot of joy, period.
Well,
full stop.
You could also say that. It was super nice to be in this story. And it was a big, meaty issue. It was 40 pages on the digital book.
Yeah.
Of story. And
it's an annual. That's how it should be.
Right. And
do you remember when annuals mattered?
Yeah, they were used to be the events used to happen.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
This was just really great. And that I read it really early on in the stack, and I thought, well, there's no way that's going to get beaten. But a couple of books came super close, but this was by far my favorite for many reasons. The art, I mean, once I knew Bengal because he did the last Batgirl, he did that Endgame tie-in with the Joker story, which was really great. But then once I turned the page and got to La Fuente, I was like, all right,
yeah,
we're in for it here.
I'm telling you, and I don't know what it's going to be, but Bengal is going to work on something like really high profile, and it's going to blow people's minds at some point. You know what I mean? Like I feel like he's somebody definitely to keep an eye out for, and when it happens, people are going to... You know.
Where did this guy come from? Well,
exactly, yeah, because he's really not. I mean, if you look at what he's been working on, you know, he did an issue of Guardians Team Up,
yeah,
you know, like an issue of, you know, Teen Titans number 10, you know, like it just nothing really, you know, bigger, you know, ongoing. But if they're smart, they put him on a book and have him be the lead artist, and you know, it'll be great. So.
The opening shot of her swinging past and grabbing the guy from getting hit by the bus is really fantastic. Yeah, yeah. Opening shot.
He's
really good.
He's definitely one to watch.
Yes. So Batgirl Annual 3. That's the pick.
I feel like I could pick up a Batgirl book now, and I have no idea what version of the character it is, or because like when you, like you said, it's her relationship with Dick over the past. Like I don't know what it is anymore.
I don't know. Quite frankly, I don't know what it is either. But to me, it. They had something, and at one point, Huntress makes a joke to Dick that your ex-girlfriend's here, and he says, she's not my ex-girlfriend, but clearly there's something that's gone on, and I don't know what it is. I can only go back on what it was before in my brain, because I think this is the same problem we talk about all the time, especially with Superman. We just don't know the emotional beats to hold on to anymore, because they don't seem to exist. Yeah. So it's too bad.
So what we're doing is making a bit of an argument for continuity.
Well, you need to have
in the past. Yeah.
Well, yes, there's always an argument for continuity, but not a reliance on it. But the issue is someone like Connor, who's been mired in continuity for what, 30 years, Connor? 20 years, right?
25 years.
25 years? Like
35 years.
It's very confusing when you say this is what it is, then this doesn't matter, but this does matter, and like you need a flow chart. You need some sort of guidance
a way to do it in a self-contained story. I mean, if you think back, and I have Elseworlds in my brain because we did that animation show, which we'll talk about later. You know, in an Elseworlds book, they used to have completely different continuity, but they would do a good job of explaining what the anchors were, what the relationships were. And they just don't do that at DC.
Yeah.
So that's my problem. But let's not dwell on that. Let's dwell on good comics.
Is she a teenager? I don't understand.
She's in college.
She's in college.
She's probably in grad school, but she's like early 20s.
Now I might be, you know, I'm a bit out of it, a little Han and Carbonite kind of thing, but wasn't she in a wheelchair?
I literally can't have this conversation again. You were around for that, Ron. It was
I know I was. I'm kidding. I kid.
Man, you're ism.
Yeah. Who is this Simone woman? Who's this?
Back away.
All right.
So this week also Invisible Republic 5 came out, and I find myself liking the book the deeper we get into it.
Absolutely.
I didn't like it as much as you did, Josh, when it started. I liked it, but I didn't love it as much as you did and as much as Paul did back when he was hosting.
I
like it more as I read more of it.
I finished it this week, and I just thought, God, every issue of this is better, which is what I had hoped for.
Yep.
I remember like the first one I liked, but there wasn't a ton there. The second one was a bit better. Like every issue is
this might be my favorite one, I think. No, I think I said that about the last one too. I think so. That's a good sign.
And that's the way it's been going. And now that like they're really establishing a thing, and now some of these characters have shown up in the story, both in the past and in the present. So you have Maya who shows up, you know, in the present. That's the spoiler. And then in the back you actually have I can't think of his name, but the you know the revolutionary leader.
No one's following a guy with that kind of facial hair.
It's Jim Gordon. Of course they follow him. By the way, this is The Adventures of Space Jim Gordon, as far as I understand. I just want to put that out there. But no, that's exactly it. And it's funny because this is the only end of the first arc. I was like, oh, it's only five issues. And Gabe made some joke on Twitter about, he's like, all right, now we just have to do that six more times or so. That'll be easy. Because they really are doing something subtle.
It's very dense, and there's a lot.
Yeah.
They could go for very sparse storytelling, considering they're basically putting this book in around other work. But, I mean, I just opened up a random page, and I can't even count the number of word balloons on this two pages. There's a lot of stuff going on.
I've used that as a criticism in the past, but I don't feel that way when I read this book. I don't have that problem with it. I really enjoyed it. Like as you said, this is probably my favorite issue. And every time they add something to it, it gets a little better. So, and I keep reading this back to back with Lazarus, and
it's a great companion piece. It's
very bleak.
Well, this issue, as this is the last issue of the arc, you know, I thought a big thing. I mean, of course, you know, Gabriel is great, and him and Karina writing is excellent. But I feel like the colors and what Jordan Boyd has done on the colors is as much of a part. It's the, you know, the whole package of the book. But I've been impressed by the colors and how they're managing the time jumps, using that subtle shift, and just really, it's spectacular. It's so good.
Jordan, I know Jordan. I've worked with Jordan, nice. And so it's awesome to see him get his due and come up. And I also know that like Gabe specifically is very, very particular on colors. You know, like he doesn't only likes a handful of the colorists that are out there. And so if you get to work with him, that's a pretty good sign. So it's really good to see. And you've seen Jordan pop up all over the place now. So
So this book just continues to be one of the best books on the racks. And if you're not reading it, I just feel sad for you.
Josh, are you, to circle back around, are you saying that the evil megalomaniacal character is your Jim Gordon, your space Jim Gordon? Or are you saying the reporter is Jim Gordon?
No, the leader, the revolutionary leader, okay. Arthur something or other.
I don't know how I feel about you comparing saintly Jim Gordon to a megalomaniacal...
Look at him.
He looks a little like him.
A little?
Well, yeah.
it's Jim Gordon with a goatee. It's not...
All right, fine.
Jeez.
And, you know, well, listen. He hasn't done a Batman book, so this is what you get, and that's what I see, and I can't turn it off now. So that's it.
Are you guys reading Thor's?
Well, I have a story about that, actually. I was glad that you added it to the...
Josh, are you reading Thor's before we get into Ron's story?
A police procedural with multiple Thor's by Jason Aaron Chris Sprouse.
That's the story. So here's, you know, we often talk a lot about, you know, the value of the comic book stores or going digital or whatever. But, you know, sure enough, this week I'm in my local comic book store. I'm at Isotope in San Francisco, and I'm hanging out with James, the proprietor, and we're just talking about comics. And I was kind of lamenting, saying, yeah, you know, I'm looking around, you know, like I'm open to, you know, like I want to dive back in, but nothing's really grabbing me. And I was kind of complaining about the Battle World stories books. I just think that there are too many of them.
Yeah,
you know, like they're so far out there, and he's just like, oh, but he's like, but you're reading Thor's, right? Because Thor's number two had just come out, and I was like, no, I'm not reading Thor's. I'm just reading the X-Men ones or whatever. And he just looked at me and he's like, Ron, he's like, police procedural, multiple Thor's, Jason Aaron, Chris Sprouse, and like literally that's exactly what he said, and I went, oh, Jesus Christ, give me that. So I bought the first two issues, and sure enough, like, oh, my God, this is amazing.
Well, I had a similar discussion, Ron, on the show right before you came back when Paul Hook coasted, and he put Thor's number one on the rundown, and I thought, okay, another Battle World book. And he basically said the same thing on the show, and I said, all right, well, fine. And I read both issues this week, and old King Thor as their gruff lieutenant and Ultimate Thor as the – Yes, Old King Thor.
Oh, right. Okay, not Odin. Sorry.
No, Old King Thor from the...
You know what? There's a lot of Thors.
Yeah.
A lot of Thors.
And the Frog Thor is the Medical Examiner and Beta Ray Bill and Ultimate Thor are partners, and they're all investigating a bunch of Jane Foster murders across all the different... I don't even care that it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't.
It doesn't really matter because Jason Aaron has got the police procedural story writing down.
Yeah.
And this is wonderful.
It's amazing, and it's like, and it's, I mean, it's just fascinating that it's just like they're all Thors. It's just like there's so many Thors.
And the title is not misleading.
And the Dick Cop is strange because that's the real quote unquote real Thor.
Yeah, the unworthy Thor.
Yeah, he's the dick. Isn't he anti-mutant? Anti-mutite.
Yeah, I've
lost track about some of the details.
I mean,
he's talking about how bad mutants are. He's standing next to Storm Thor, mm-hmm. Stormborn, and she's like, you know, I'm standing right here.
But yeah, no, I've had so much fun. Like, there was that one shot of all the Thors coming down on the Hulks, and I was like trying to spot the different Thors. I'm like, oh, there's that Thor. You know, it's doing a great job of incorporating all the Thors that we've ever known.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just great. I mean, like, the thing is that it doesn't have to be Thor. Like, as you said, Jason Aaron's got the police procedural down, and it's just a murder case that happens to be Thor's. It's just...
it's top 10, but yeah. With just Thor.
Yeah.
Just everyone's a Thor. You're a Thor. I'm a Thor.
Everywhere a Thor,
And Loki's the down and out informant on the street is probably also the murderer.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's at the end of this issue. He's the first suspect. But I think that's too easy.
But if you watch any cop show, you know it's never the first suspect.
Yeah, it's never the first
suspect. No, of course not.
Yeah, and
he's the most obvious, so that he's the red hair.
It's always the guest star you recognize.
Right.
Yeah.
A Law and Order, it's usually a Broadway actor. A guy who did a lot of movies in the 70s.
Anyway. The guy who was on Oz.
So, Southern Bastards number 10.
Yes.
Just realizing Jason Aaron has a lot of content in this section.
this is the Jason Aaron segment, Jason Latour. I mean, I just want to talk about Southern Bastards number 10 because it is, it's what they're doing with this book is, I believe, to be so special and so well done, you know, and just with every issue, it just adds more layers and gets a little deeper and sucks you in a little more. And with this issue, you know, I'm just completely all in into the world, and when an issue comes out, I'm like, oh, when's the next one? Yeah.
Wasn't the last issue the focus on the sheriff?
Yeah. Yes.
I thought we were going to get more of that. This is the focus issue on Esau, the really terrifying right hand man to boss coach boss.
Yeah. Apparently, this homecoming arc is going to go around and focus. This is called part two, so it's probably like just zipping around to some of the. Lesser characters, not lesser, but you know what I mean? Some of the more minor characters that we've met through here and going around and focusing on all, which is a technique that was tried and true in Scalped,
yes.
which I can remind longtime readers was my favorite series pretty much the whole time it was running once I started reading it.
There's
a lot, he learned a lot from that he's applying here, and I have no problem with that.
What do you think is more terrifying, Esau in general, or the shot of Coach Boss with his legs spread open and we're basically at his crotch level?
Well, I mean, you talked about Jason Latour, and he's a guy who is really showing us something here, and I think that's a good example of it. And he's like, I'm going to put you
at ball level.
Right, but let's think about what that room in that area right there specifically smells like. I mean, like, it's...
Yeah.
And
that's a big part of the Southern Bastards phenomenon, if you ask me, is that we know, like, Jason Aaron is proven, you know, I think he's proven his ability to be an amazing writer. But Jason Latour has always been somebody who were like, yeah, this guy looks like he could really do some good stuff. And this is turning out to be, this is going to be his magnum opus. This is going to be the book that defines his artistic career, I think. And it doesn't look like anything else on there. I know from talking to him, he puts so much painstaking effort into that book to give you that feeling when you look at that, you can smell the room, you know, which is amazing when you think about it in a visual medium, right? It's just, I love it. It's so good.
He's coloring it too?
Well, no, he gets some color assists from Rico Renzi, I think. But yeah, it's just so good.
Do we think that gun runners in Alabama wear the glow-in-the-dark face masks like that?
Now.
I liked how when the coach yelled at Esau and is like get, you know, about the defensive coordinator killing himself, and Esau's like, all right, now's my chance, and he's like trying to come up with plays. Like,
he's bad at it.
But he's terrible at it. He's like, I've been telling you for years, coach, give me a chance, and he's at the barbecue place, like, well, I guess we'll just blitz all the time. And even the waitress knows more about about the defensive schemes, and even the pastor does than he does. And Esau is like every like non-Southern person's worst Southern nightmare.
Zubaz.
It's just like the angry, has no prospects, young guy. Oh, he's not so young. I had a hard time figuring it out because at one point he looks like he's got a white beard. I thought he was a younger guy. Anyway, it doesn't
Nothing
matter.
To lose. It doesn't care about anybody.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. And appears to be very strong and has access to weaponry.
Yep.
So good. And also a very interesting essay in the back by Jason Latour about the flag.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. Well, this had the variant with the dog on the Confederate flag and very thoughtful piece from a true Southerner.
I'm pretty sure non-Southerners cannot do a book called Southern Bastards.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I don't think you get to – I couldn't do this book and put my name on the cover. Yeah. That wouldn't
– It comes from such a place of reverence and love for these two guys, you know, also, of their Southern roots, you know.
And trying to just make sense of it.
Yeah,
really. Because there's all this ugly stuff there, also. So that, you know, that's what makes it interesting.
Yeah. Well, continuing in this week in Jason Aaron,
Star Wars number 7. I was still looking at that picture of Esau, and it's scaring me. this is another one of those issues where we've taken just sort of a look at something else going on in the world, but except this time it's Star Wars. So we get an idea about the time between the end of episode 3, I guess, and the beginning of episode 4 when Luke finds Ben Kenobi. And we spend
some time.
Yeah, 94. and so with this, the art by, I forgot his name, and I have to flip
Simone
back.
Bianchi.
Yeah, Simone Bianchi, who I haven't seen for a while, and I actually thought I worked really well for here. Jason Aaron sort of puts us inside Ben Kenobi's head as he gets to Tatooine and watches what Jabba is doing to the people during a drought, which on a desert planet is pretty severe. I liked it. I had fun with it.
Yeah, what I thought was interesting about this is that, like, listen, I've read a lot of Star Wars. I think we've covered this before, recently, in fact. I don't recall any Obi-Wan on Tatooine stories ever reading those. And
well,
I'm sure
that's kind of obvious.
And there's a novel that just came out recently, wasn't there, about that?
I think
it was a solo young Obi-Wan story. But anyway, other than that, of all the things we've read, we've not read that.
Yeah, I thought, I was like, oh, this is very very clever, very interesting, and apparently it's very windy because his robe is always flying up above him. But
he's dramatic.
Yeah.
He's a dramatic artist.
You can't see us off to the side. His assistant's got a fan.
Yeah, he's just always walking with a fan droid in front of him.
Yeah, a fan droid. That's like yelling at it because it's the wrong angle.
He gets to draw like a gang of Jabba's, you know, thugs, and there's the Weak Ways and the Prune Face, and a couple of assassin droids.
There's a Forlom, right? Yeah. So
yeah,
I would have liked to have seen. And I understand that Obi-Wan's operating in the shadows or whatever, but I would like to see a couple scenes of angry Owen and Obi-Wan telling Obi-Wan to stay away.
Is this
he mentions it?
Yeah.
Is this Ewan McGregor Obi-Wan or is this Alec Guinness Obi-Wan?
Alec Guinness, but you know what? I never felt that was a big.
You mean visually?
Visually? Yeah.
It's a little Owen.
It is. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's sort of mid.
Yeah,
it works. It actually works in that context. You're not sort of leaning one way or another. What I thought was interesting from a characterization point is that they paint young Luke Skywalker as a sort of brave, gutsy kid and not wormy.
Right, which is, I mean,
it's funny because I've spent so much time looking at him in the first Star Wars, just whining about everything.
Yep.
That to sort of paint him as a brave warrior from the first is an interesting choice. It's not a bad one.
A little bit of a whitewash, let's be honest.
A little, yeah, okay, I'll give you that. A little brave Luke. I like this better, but it almost paints him more as young Anakin than
yeah. Of course, we don't truly know the origins of Wormy.
No, we don't. I mean, listen, that's probably some deep Star Wars shit for people listening right now. People listening at home may not know that there's a – I don't even – is it considered Legends now? It's not canon anymore, is it?
I don't know.
It was considered fact that Luke Skywalker's Tatooine friends called him Wormy. That was his nickname.
I just love it.
And it's mentioned in one of these other books, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
Yes. Someone brought it up. Maybe it was in the Darth Vader book. I'm not sure. Maybe it was in this.
Yeah.
So, that is canon then.
I like how Wikipedia doesn't mention it. It goes, Skywalker cultivated a like-minded group of friends on Tatooine, amongst whom he earned the nickname Wormy.
That's not a good name.
No.
No, it's not.
And it fits very much with the Taji Station Power Converter. Well, I guess I'll never get out of here.
Oh, Biggs is
right. That's not this kid. Oh.
Biggs is right.
Let me go stare at the suns.
Oh, man.
When is Stuart Immonen joining this book?
Next arc, I think.
Soon.
Yeah, soon-ish. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know how long this story is going to go. Or was this a one-shot?
I think it's just a one-shot.
It's probably a one-shot if Stuart Immonen's coming on next.
Yeah.
It's probably a, oh, shit, we need some time because John Cassidy ran out of steam.
Well, yeah, we knew that. I'd rather have Immonen than whatchamacallit.
Well, you can just leave that as a fill in the blank.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'd rather have Immonen than.
Did you see? You saw those. You saw those preview pages, right?
I did see the preview pages.
Yeah, they were. Oh, they're beautiful. Yeah, Immonen. Immonen's great. And he's a great fit for that. He's a great fit for Star Wars. So it's fascinating. So now I'm gonna spend all weekend trying to find the origin of the Wormy nickname.
I think that's a good use of your time.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's gotta be some fanfic.
Yeah, oh, totally. So I think we're done with that.
Wormy.
If you would like to support more of this kind of content, and I don't know why you wouldn't, you should go to ifanboy.com/support. There you will find a link to Amazon, where if you go to Amazon and buy something through that link, then we get a little taste of that purchase price, which adds nothing and only gives. So there's no reason not to do that as far as we're concerned, and that's actually super important to our operation. You can also donate directly to the show if you'd like to through an iFanboy membership, which is $3 a month or $30 a year, or you can give in any amount that you would like to show your support for the show to let us know that there are people out there listening who want to contribute and help us run things, keep us in Yeti mics because we break those things a lot. It turns out they're not made for air travel. It turns out
no.
This is the kind of things we do though to keep the show coming every single Sunday for as long as we can remember. So think about that for a minute. But to everybody who has supported the show in any of those ways at any point over the years, we thank you very much. And if you've been thinking about it, that's where you want to go. ifanboy.com/support.
So now before we move on, I did find a page on Angel Fire.
Oh, God.
About Luke Skywalker. And it says that he was nicknamed Wormy because he worked as a farmer.
That's what they told him.
That's all it says.
And then behind his back, it was a different story. Oh, yeah, no, it's because you're a farmer.
Yeah.
Oh, guys. What can I be like Turbo or something?
Turbo!
No, it's Wormy. It's because you're a farm. There's farm, there's worms. And Wormy's doing it again.
Oh, God.
Do they even have worms on a desert planet? Is that a thing?
I don't even know.
I guess they have giant worms. That's Dune, though. I don't know.
I'm sure they do. Oh, next God. On Josh. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm fairly certain this is the last issue of Black Widow 20.
Boy, there was a letter at the end that said it's the end from the author of the book, from Nathan Edmondson.
That was my first clue.
Yeah, that was a good clue.
It's a good. I think I can make it in this cop game.
I don't know that I'm willing to make the call, though. Gun shy about this being the last issue of Black Widow. And apparently Punisher will go on forever. Yeah, I think it was the last issue. I think it was a really interesting issue. Because what we have here is a story of Natalia back in Cuba in the Cold War days. And she assassinates a lot of seemingly nice people. And then they cut to her flying along with the Avengers, and you think, "Oh right, that's grim."
I like Miss Olsen. It's Natasha, by the way.
I don't know why I said Natalia.
I do like as a way of not dealing with Battleworld. It's like, oh, the world is ending. Let's just have a flashback.
I do too.
I don't want to deal with that. And it was a really grim way to end the series. I mean,
yeah, but fitting.
No, totally fitting. It was in character, and it really adds a layer of depth to her, and she's constantly thinking about these things she's done and clearing the red from her ledger. But it was just a grim way to. I mean, she's just the last couple of pages is just her and that pistol with the suppressor just
tell you something,
taking everybody out, even the cat.
Even the cat. That was pretty rough. It explains why she's been way into her cat this whole time.
That's true.
I really like the sound effect they used for this suppressor. Swack. I've never seen that used, and it's perfect.
Yeah.
That sort of silenced pistol sound. Yeah, it was pretty grim, pretty blood soaked, and pretty awful.
In a good way.
Yeah, totally. And you know, it for me, the story of this is still. I think Phil Noto just absolutely showed everybody what he can do from a storytelling standpoint. His sort of graphic design has never been at question, but this was.
And his pinups, but this is really. He's made big leaps with his storytelling.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So I'm excited to see him move on to, I guess, Chewbacca. That's going to be a different tone.
What's that going to be like? Is this going to be a lot of thought balloons?
That's a good question. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Is it going to be like the holiday special in comics?
I feel like it should be. And I feel like Jerry Duggan probably has the sense of humor to pull that off.
20 like, minutes of Wookiee roars in the living room.
I can't.
Oh, man.
Oh, itchy. Itchy and it's porno.
Mala.
Speaking of grim and bloody, Lazarus 18.
Cliffhanger. Cliffhanger.
Oh, my God. Is she dead?
Yeah.
No, because you turn the page and he says, well, she's an indestructible human, so probably not dead. Well, virtually impossible to kill.
Virtually.
So... Can it be called the cliffhanger if your story is about a woman who's virtually impossible to kill?
Yeah, it's still a cliffhanger. I was shocked at the end. I was, you know.
I didn't see that. I didn't see it coming.
I didn't see it coming at all.
I was really enjoying it, too, and I was like, oh.
What was great about it was that it happened not on a page turn. Mm-hmm. So used to that happening on a page turn, and just in the middle of a conversation, in the middle of a page, just bullet to the head.
Yeah.
But it read so well that I didn't see it coming ahead of time, even though it was at the end of the page.
Yeah, but this continues to be wonderful. And you're right, it's a great companion piece to Invisible Republic. Invisible Republic?
Yep.
Invisible Republic.
Natalia. Seriously.
Josh, are you still offering to kill those who don't read this book?
Oh, yeah, no, that's not going. They get to finish their story. It's Michael Lark and Greg Rucka. They're telling a great big story. Let's not be specific. By the way,
Ron, were you aware at Image that he was in your name threatening to murder people?
I was aware. I was glad to hear it. Yeah, definitely.
I said I will come for you.
Wasn't there talk of putting people against the wall?
I did say that also. I will come for you, and you will be put against the wall.
You don't put them against the wall to admire the wall.
Listen.
Anyway, this was a big action issue wrapped around some fun stuff that was happening with the new doctor who's trying to cure the Carlisle father. Who was poisoned in the last arc. And there's just the world building that's just so expert. It's just wonderful.
So well done.
I do find myself wishing they would keep a map going, like on the front page, just so you can get a sense of who owns what territory, how things have changed.
Well, and also we know that maps in general are just a good idea.
Maps are always a good idea, but yeah. I feel like a world like this, in which territory is paramount, and they're constantly talking about there's a war going on in some part of the world and some other person's lost part of their territory. It'd be great to have an updated map every month. Yeah. You don't have to have it on the front page. Have it in the back matter.
I'm pro maps.
You know, put Eric Trautman to work.
He likes to do that.
He loves it.
Yeah, yeah.
Have him make a map. That. Once you make the first one, you just have to update it. That's all.
Yeah, exactly. Just keep it going.
Mm-hmm. So
I'm behind this map.
Josh, you're usually not pro map. Are you pro map in this scenario?
I could see a benefit in this.
Whoa, how is Josh not pro map?
we mentioned it last week. How excited we were for a map in one of the comics, and he just gave a shrug, a verbal.
Listen, I'm not saying I'm for all maps. I'm not just blanket map approval.
When is a map a bad thing? That's what I want to know. See, blanket map approval.
No, I can't do it. I could see it. I could see it maybe being in the book at the wrong place.
Son of a bitch. It's got to be strategically placed. It's got to be strategically placed.
What if they're putting too much effort into the map and not enough? There's an issue. They're putting too much effort into the map and not enough into the story and the characters. They're so worried about where everything is and the explanations for everything that it loses soul. You need something to back up the map.
Well, no, you need a balance to the map. I mean, you need a balance to the map making. It's all things. I mean, there's the story, there's the art, there's the colors, there's the lettering, there's the map. You know, it all works together.
Hands down, the nerdiest episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm ever. That's what this is. Who's against the map? You? Up the map.
Anyway, so Daredevil number 17. As I finished this issue, I was like, you know, it's good that this is the way Insomni Daredevil's wrapping up, because this is getting long in the tooth.
When I look back on this run, I'm going to forget they ever moved to San Francisco. But as a denizen of San Francisco, Ron, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Is it feasible and or comfortable in that climate to be constantly wearing 3 layers of clothing?
Oh, and it's encouraged, actually.
Even in the summertime.
It's a weird climate.
Connor, let me tell you about summer. All right. Earlier this week, it hit like 85, and then the next day it was like 83, and then it was over. So yes, it's feasible because we get summer maybe 6 days of the year, and all the rest of the time you need to walk around with that hoodie. You need to carry that with you wherever you go.
They're doing an amazing thing with breathable fabrics.
Yes. Yeah, they really did. They really have. Yeah. So
in this issue, we see that in addition to the red three-piece suit that Matt's been wearing with the red shirt underneath, he's also wearing the Daredevil costume underneath of that.
But so now, was he wearing a face mask?
Right. That seemed to pop up.
That had to happen in panel 6.
Also, if he's having like a bathroom emergency, like he has a bad burrito.
Right. Then, which, you know, in the mission can happen.
Right. So... Yeah. That's fraught with danger. I'm saying all those layers.
That costume change happened very oddly.
Okay, well, wait though, maybe he just put it on before that meeting.
Maybe.
Well, because I'll tell you something. I'm going to tell you what ruins the lines of a suit: a utility belt and that thing strapped on your leg. That is easily going to ruin the lines of any suit. And if you look at him in the previous images as he's jumping around in the suit.
Yeah.
There's no billy club strapped to that leg.
There's no indication. Yeah, he's got a vest.
Well, it's kind of like how Captain America used to have the shield strapped to his back under his clothes.
Yeah.
And yet you never seem to see the shield. But
that'd be hot on a Brooklyn summer day, I tell you what.
Just that metal, just a reflection.
Huge metal plate under your back.
But
that's not breathable. Maybe vibranium is breathable. I don't know.
But yeah, I'm tired of the shroud. I just feel like it's been going on forever.
So, I have not.
That
been
seems to be a thing in Daredevil that happens.
Yeah, long in the tooth.
Like you're like, this is great, and then you're like, okay, let's move along. I like it. I do
move along.
I think that it's just running on a little long. I really do enjoy some of the chances that they've been taking, and you know,
sure, no, it's been great. I'm not detracting from how great it's been. It's been legendary, but we're done.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, let's move on.
All right. Literally.
Literally. Let's just...
So Rasputin number 7. Can I just say, as I flip through my books, I still haven't opened Sex Criminals. I feel like I shouldn't. It's like this long leftover instinct of comic book reader. I was like, I don't know, I should leave that in the bag. And I just didn't open it.
Oh, all right. Well, no.
Sorry. anyway, Rasputin number 7. So what started out as a sort of story about what maybe was not actually, but what could have been going on with Grigory Rasputin has turned into this thing where he seems to be involved in many or some of the world's conspiracies. As we get to present day, we find a reporter that has figured out who he is, and the reason that she did that is because she has a still frame of unseen Zapruder film.
Oh, no.
Where he is apparently resurrecting Kennedy.
No.
Why? Why is that unacceptable?
Everything else is okay.
Because that's like the go-to thing.
Yeah. A little too easy.
But that's also Gresham's thing. I mean,
listen, I fell off this a couple issues ago.
This is no different than what he did with Proof, which was to take all of the different cryptozoological things and put them all in a shared universe. Whereas this, you're taking things that, you know, real world conspiracy things and sticking Rasputin in all of them or some of them, which, you know, as a theme, that works for me.
All right. Good for you. Is there a map in it?
No.
Well, then what are we talking about it?
I don't need a map. They go to Dallas. I know where that is.
Maybe not everybody knows where Dallas is.
Also, in this, Zapruder knew Rasputin because they were both immigrants in the same neighborhood.
I feel like there should be more Zapruder fanfic.
There's not any.
Do we know about the man Zapruder? You know?
Yes, he felt very horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. I love me some Zapruder.
All right, so those are the books we're going to talk about this week on FMW.com. Find a post for this show.
Down. I didn't even write the book.
Okay, whatever. You enjoy it, you enjoy it. That's all I care about, Josh, at the end of the day. Just a little bit of happiness for you on a Wednesday.
That's fine. I liked it. I liked it a lot. That's why I put it on the list.
So go to fanboy.com. You'll find a post for this show. That's where you can talk about these books, other books you read this week, whatever is on your mind this week in comics on ifanboy.com. And I think This Week in Comics is a different show.
Yes. Well,
let's do some email. The first email is from Parth from Mississauga, Ontario, Canada, who says, I just finished a course at my university called The Superhero. The readings in the course consisted of All-Star Superman, Batman The Dark Knight Returns, the first volume of Kamala Khan's Ms. Marvel, Promethea Book 1, X-Men God Loves, Man Kills. The film Birdman was also going to be viewed, but time ran out. I was wondering if you guys were lucky enough to have comics in your university classes, and if so, which ones?
Well,
we're so old.
I think we were lucky enough, but not because our professors included them, rather because we shoved them down our professors' throats.
You did that?
Yes, we did.
Mad Love.
I did that. I did a whole thing on Mad Love, the Batman the Animated Series episode and comic, Mad Love.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were in that class, Josh.
Yeah. Well, I don't remember everything.
The thing about that's like when you and Ron became friends.
No. That was before that. We were already friends.
The Simpsons.
That was senior year. We became friends junior year.
All right.
Mm-hmm. I still have the email.
So, Parth needs to understand that we are much older than him.
Yes.
And there wasn't even a healthy trade program when we were in college.
No.
I think Watch was – Mouse was taught in college back then. In colleges, not in our college.
Not in our college, yeah.
But, I mean, they didn't even really collect comics back into very that was a rarity when back then.
Yeah.
I mean, there were trades and volumes and things, but they were sort of just – there wasn't everything basically. Yeah. But I don't know that was it as much as just I didn't take any classes where that was a thing. I took a bunch of English classes. I took sci-fi classes. And it was never.
Well, it wasn't in the zeitgeist. Superheroes are in the zeitgeist now, so it makes sense there would be college classes on it. It was, you know, 1996, this wasn't a thing.
Yeah.
This wasn't a thing to be studied.
Yeah. No, agreed. Yeah. We were a bipartisan.
Say something. Personally, from my point of view, I'm glad.
Yeah.
Because we all, you know, we're self-taught about a thing because of this thing that we did. And I think that worked out better.
I wouldn't have enjoyed a college class on comics. I would have got annoyed at everybody.
Yeah. I was just thinking the same thing. Well, now here's a question. Do you think when this whole empire of riches comes crashing down, do you think you could find a home in academia? Could you teach a class, Connor or Josh?
Yeah.
I know, Josh. I knew you were going to say that.
Totally.
Yeah. Connor?
It depends on what aspect, though,
because there's a different thing. You're talking about, like, there's the class on the superhero. There's a class on comic books. There's a class on...
On craft.
Craft, on sequential storytelling. Those are all separate things. And I would teach all of them.
We should start an online university, like Phoenix.
Yeah, let's do that. That's our next game.
Hey, kids, would you like your tuition money to be nearly completely wasted?
You can earn a degree in comic books.
So we did, as Ron mentioned, there was a class at the very end of our tenure, that the Children, Youth, and Mass Culture class, in which we talked. We watched the Mad Love episode in class of the animated series, and then talked about that. And I believe one of the papers we wrote in that class, Josh, was about Mad Love or comics or something.
Pretty sure, yeah.
I don't remember that at all.
I have a strong, memory of that.
It's vaguely familiar. I know I did a paper on Dawson's Creek.
That was in that class. It was in that class. I did one on Party of Five.
Yeah.
I remember the Mad Love thing because that was in the class because the teacher of that class was my advisor and I
Mazzarella.
But I remember that. So I remember that distinctly. But I also remember writing way more papers about Star Wars than comics.
Yeah.
Every chance I got. I took music and mass media. No, music. What was that music class with Rothbard?
Oh, the one at night.
One
day a week.
Yeah, music in the media or whatever, and we had to write a paper.
Music in the media.
We had to write. I wrote a paper about leitmotifs.
Well, Ron, one of the first projects we did together freshman year in the TV production was you produced the Star Wars talk show, and I was the host.
Yes.
You're like, can you talk about Star Wars for like 5 minutes? And I was like, can I talk about Star Wars for 5 minutes? And that's how Ron and I met.
Jackpot.
Just so happens I was assigned to be your talent, and I was able to talk about Star Wars.
Remember the bag of books I brought in as props?
I still have that tape somewhere.
Like, why did I, like, okay, so we're packing for college, and I decide to pack 3 boxes of Star Wars books. Like, it's not like I bought them while we were at college. I brought them with me to college.
Right. That doesn't sound that weird to me. Like, if you had said to me, why did I pack 5 years worth of EW back issues, that would have been like, I would have understood it, but it would have been stupid. But at least the Star Wars books, like, I'm like, oh, I could see why you might need those.
Yeah. So, all right. Good time.
I didn't learn how to operate anything in college because I was constantly asked to be talent for things.
I remember there was one class, and let's just fuck comics for a second.
Yeah.
There was one class where I think it was the junior year TV class, the advanced one, where you had to pick your own crew for every production. And I literally didn't operate any equipment for the entire project because I was willing to do anything. I played Martin Luther King. At the end, the teacher was like, Connor has to do something. I was an infomercial host. I died in one scene. I was a guy in the box having been accused of shooting the subway truck. Remember that thing? Yeah.
Oh, man. Wow.
Good times.
Memories. All right. Next email. Chris from Chicago says, so upon looking at this shipping list this week, I saw 4 Transformers books being released, and this got me thinking. I thought about this for a while. A few hours of pondering later and some discussion and research, I have no answer. So after a few hours of more pondering, I decided to ask you guys. Are Transformers, Star Wars, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, G.I. Joe, Doctor Who, Dexter, Mad Max, True Blood, etc. used as an entrance for non-comic readers into comics, or has that idea been abandoned to admit that they are for current readers that are also interested in those properties? I'd like to hear your thoughts on licensed comics, not only to the question, but if you guys read them and what are your thoughts?
You clearly read Star Wars. We talked about that.
Star Wars, yeah.
We read some, but I think generally we all have been burned enough times that they're usually not great.
Yeah.
So
we've all
made a jump. You guys read MacGyver and liked it every once in a while there'll be something over there. Remember the IDW crossover that was like the Ghostbusters and the Transformers? Yeah.
So horribly disappointing.
Yeah, I know. I get that. But like, so every once in a while we'll dive in. But remember there was a S.H.I.E.L.D. comic at one point? Like
24 Vic comic. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're almost always bad.
Yeah.
The thing is, in the 80s, they were used to get quote unquote non-comic readers into comics. I mean, everyone I know growing up got into comics through the G.I. Joe comic.
Yep. Me too.
But that, I don't think, happens.
Wasn't that just a sort of ancillary marketing effort to sell more toys, really?
Right, but that's how they got into reading other comics, was they watched the G.I. Joe cartoon, And then it was a G.I. Joe comic, and then we went and got that. And then that
But they were actually selling G.I. Joe comics at that point, so there was like a viable revenue stream.
Yeah, totally, yeah. But
the point is still, that's how people started reading comics when I was a kid, and at least in my circle.
Exactly. I was interested in G.I. Joe. I watched the cartoon and then saw the comic. Like, oh, cool. Then I learned a lot about Vietnam. And
a lot more than I realized.
shit got real in third grade all of a sudden. It was just... But no, I think
I'm in the shit.
I think right now I think that the people making these comics are making them with the intent to draw people who are interested into the properties into comics. But the reality is that the people reading them are people who are just reading comics that are interested in the properties.
Yeah,
that's my professional opinion.
Well, you guys at Image didn't do very many. You just didn't.
No. There was a blanket, you know, not doing any of them. Trust me. If I could tell you some of the properties that came our way that we turned down, because it was the kind of thing is that nobody remembers good licensed comics really, you know, recently. You know what I mean? Like, and I mean, and the thing is that it's. You know, people like things, and so they're going to want to read things that they like, and it makes sense. I mean, it's not terribly – I don't find licensed comics terribly rewarding because I feel like they're a little masturbatory.
You know what's really funny?
What?
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is on this list, but Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is a comic.
That's very funny. That is not a light – yeah, that is a comic. That's a very good point.
That's true.
I think the comics of this ilk that do well are the ones that have a long history of being good comics. So like Star Wars, you know, for years and years and years was a comic out of Marvel in the 80s. And G.I. Joe for years and years and years was a comic out of Marvel in the 80s. And they were good. And so those are the ones that tend to be – I mean the G.I. Joe ones we dip in and out of, and we read them for probably 5-6 years, Josh, of those IDW G.I. Joe books in one form or another. And they were various levels of good. And because I think there's a history of that, there's a tradition of that. I can't speak to the other ones, but I don't imagine Dexter is a very good comic.
Yeah, I mean, I
that's the thing about IDW basically is that they mostly just said, well, we're going to do this.
That's why I don't read any of their books anymore.
Yeah, and that doesn't interest me.
Yeah.
I guess if there's a thing where you can't get enough of whatever that thing is, and obviously there are lots of those people out there. You know, and like people seem to really that's one of our stock answers. People seem to really like that, which is a way of saying that probably sucks. But people seem to really like Transformers comics.
Yeah,
you know,
but that also has a long history. In the 80s, they were a companion book to G.I. Joe, and I would buy them when they crossed over, and suddenly Spider-Man was fighting.
And so, like over the past, you know, however many years, every once in a while, I'll try one of them because I hear really good things about it. But at the end of the day, I don't care about the property, so and usually the craft isn't so great that I can't, you know, get past it. I think that if I had no interest in G.I. Joe, even those great G.I. Joe Cobra issues, I wouldn't have really liked.
Right, because it's the association with the property.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because this topic comes up a lot actually in an ancillary hobby of mine. For those who follow me or whatever might know that I like to play pinball.
And, what?
Yeah, I know. Shocking. How many episodes did it take for me to mention it now? But I
haven't mentioned it yet.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, but it's actually really funny because there's a long history of license, at least it took a trend in the 80s and 90s of, and now the 2000s, but licensed pinball machines where, you know, like there's a, you know, like there's a Lethal Weapon 3 pinball machine or a Baywatch pinball machine and all this sort of
stuff.
Like,
they're like slot machines in that
sense.
Well,
yeah, yeah. And like the people making the pinball machines are taking the approach that this will get people to play pinball because people will be like, oh, hey, I like Metallica. I'll play a Metallica-themed pinball machine, which is true to a certain extent. But then what's funny is that the people deep in the hobby often like roll their eyes. Like they recently came out with a WrestleMania-themed one, and people are like, oh, whatever, wrestling, who can, you know? And it's this whole – it's literally the same argument. It's literally the same conversation that we're having here, which I find very kind of funny.
What?
And what's funny is that sometimes some of the bet – like there's a pinball machine from the 90s based on the movie Congo. And you would think to dismiss it because it's Congo, but it's actually a fun machine, and I have a blast playing it. So
there is an ironic appeal to, like, I'm playing the Romancing the Stone pinball machine.
Sure.
Listen, don't you be denigrating Romancing the Stone.
I'm not. I'm just picking a random thing from a long time ago that if I was like in a bar and I looked over and I saw like.
Yeah.
The Romancing the Stone pinball machine. I'd be like, that's weird that exists, and I would like to give it a quarter.
Yeah.
And it works.
Well, it wouldn't. Yeah. It would be 50 or 75 cents.
This is not the point.
Yeah. But anyway, I find it funny.
Pinball Dantic.
The licensed quandary is not something that's unique to comics, and it's something that that a lot of people wrestle with because for some reason people see a license and they immediately devalue it, I think.
At least in the comics,
yeah, but
underground.
Also in comics, they are trying to tell a story.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not I don't want to come down on pinball, but you're not telling a story. You're not like that was out of character, that pinball.
True,
this
yeah,
is a framework for a game, yeah.
Yeah. But the game's got to be compelling to be interesting or not, you know.
Sure,
yeah,
but usually the property doesn't so much matter. That there are ways that I'm sure it does. I've played the Star Wars ones that like were heavily integrated with Star Wars, and that made it more fun, but Congo not as much.
Yeah.
All right. Good job, guys. Email us at contact@fanboy.com or call the voicemail line at 888-FANBOY 326-2697 if you want to get in on the show. Those are some great discussion topics. We thank Chris and Parth for sending those in. And now we got some plugs and things to announce. First, if you look back in the feed behind this show, you'll find the Justice League Gods and Monsters show that the Animated Brain Trust recorded. And this is the latest DC Universe animated original movie, which is the return of Bruce Timm to an Elseworlds story about the Justice League. And it was fantastic. So you can look for that behind the show or find that on fanboy.com. And next week, I believe it's next week, Ron, you'll have a Fantastic Four podcast for everybody, won't you?
I don't know about everybody. I don't know. At this point, I don't know if I'm even going to go see it. It's gotten such bad reviews.
Oh, has it?
I thought they were embargoed till release.
Yeah, they are embargoed until the day of release. But yeah, it's going to be a rough one. I actually got to see if anyone's around who's going to do the show.
We have the most fun with the rough ones.
Yeah, they are true. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, it should be fun. So we'll see.
So that's coming up maybe next week. Keep your eye out for our social media channels and iFanboy itself.com itself. You'll find if there is a show on Fantastic Four. I'll be away, so it's up to Ron. It's all up to you, Ron.
It's all up to me. All up to me, because I can't stop podcasting. And in fact, you go check out, if you like mobile phones and particularly Android phones, go check out my other show, All About Android, over on the Twit Network at twit.tv/AAA. It's video and audio, so you can hear and see all you want. There you go.
Has there been any more chip sightings since last time?
No, Larry Wilcox. No, Larry Wilcox. We got a whole bunch of new phones, though. Motorola got a bunch of new phones. Interesting. So
I think you should start pitching increasingly specific shows about...
I've got that covered.
Hey.
You may have noticed this is episode 496, which means we're barreling towards episode 500, and that is a big number. We'll deal with the existential crisis of that when we get to it. But we're actually not going to do anything for episode 500 because that happens to be the week my sister's getting married and all three of us are going to be at the wedding, and we're not really going to be able to do the big sort of live show we normally do.
Sometimes life gets in the way.
And that's an important thing about us getting in the way. So we're going to do a big old celebratory extravaganza the next week for episode 501. And on that show, I'll tell you why that's appropriate. We'll find that. So we'll do a live all media.
The Stormtroopers?
Well, no, but I'll tell you that in the show. It'll be a fun little revelation for everybody. So this is what I found when I dived deep into the data the other day. So episode 501 will be a live all media episode. We'll record it and we will stream it live as we do on Google Hangout and YouTube. And so if you want to get your email on that show, send an email to contact@ifanboy.com, label it episode 501 or 501, just mark it for that episode. We'll compile them all. And we'll just go nuts. Ron hasn't done one of these in a while.
I have not. I'm
so
excited.
It'll be fun.
Oh, you should really look forward to the part where we spent 45 minutes at the beginning trying to figure out why it's not working.
Hopefully.
Well, if we figured out the last couple without Ron, then we're okay.
Yeah.
Let's not.
I've been. It was funny because over the years, as I was often in La La Land, and you guys were still doing this, every now and then I would be aware that this stuff was going on, and I would be sitting there with my phone, and when it didn't ring, I was like, okay, good. I trained them well. So
look forward to that in a couple of weeks. It looks like in 5 weeks we'll have that show, and so get your emails in there. We'll talk about we'll take questions on virtually anything. We're not saying we'll answer them all. In fact, we don't normally get to answer them all, but we'll take questions on virtually anything for that episode.
Well, there we go. So get over to ifanboy.com in the meantime. You can comment on this episode. You can talk about what you thought about this week's book. You can ask, why all the hate? For whatever, you have to say it like 80s Keanu. That's how that works. You can find other podcasts that we have done in the past, both video and audio. You can also follow us at facebook.com/ifanboy and @ifanboy on Twitter. We are also on @JAFlanagan, @CSKilpatrick, and @RonXO on Twitter ourselves.
Yes. And if you enjoy the show, please go to iTunes and write a review about it, or better yet, tell your friends and compatriots and family about us. Tell someone that you've never talked to about the show about it. Just be like, hey, I listened to this thing. You should check it out. You are our biggest marketing arm, and we appreciate it. So thank you for getting the word out. So that's it for this week's show. Always a blast. I love you guys.
Whoa. Whoa. Got uncomfortable for everybody listening.
It's okay. He said that before. We know.
It's fine. And until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I almost was yawning there. I'm Josh. That doesn't mean anything about what you said, Ron.
We're going to really work hard to keep his interest up these days.
I had to turn the air conditioning off in this room. I'm basically slowly putting myself to sleep.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.